Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the DC Hospital Association's Continuing Education Initiative for the Improvement and Treatment of People Who Use Banned and Non-Prescribed Drugs in the District. As always, I'm Laura. I'm an ER doctor in the district, and I will be your host today. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about home starts of buprenorphine from the emergency department. I think this is something that probably not a lot of people are doing from the ED right now, but it is something that has become a sort of a big movement in a lot of other places, and I think it's probably something we need to start building into our protocols here. As always, I am not an addiction specialist. I am an ER doc, but I am building my sort of recommendations for all of this off of protocols that are supported by addiction docs and are usually run by ER docs. So this is stuff that has been implemented from other emergency departments effectively. And has the blessing of addiction doctors. So I'm going to start by talking a little bit about sort of the philosophy behind why we should be doing home starts. One of the things that I heard a lot sort of coming through training and as I was sort of learning more about this was I was always sort of taught that if you can't get someone directly into treatment or you can't make sure that they have a follow-up appointment, that you shouldn't be giving them buprenorphine in the first place. Which is just not true, particularly given the sort of realities of the healthcare system right now. So I'm going to go over first, sort of unpacking that a little bit and sort of the philosophy behind why we should be doing this. I'll talk about a couple of different dosing strategies, talk a little bit about how I counsel patients, and then at the end, I'll talk a bit about ways to sort of protocolize this, either within your hospital or just within your own practice, to sort of make sure you've got everything built in a way that makes it really easy to, when you have an appropriate patient, to just sort of click and go and not have to remember all of this sort of de novo. As always, I will be linking sources and sort of model protocols that I'm drawing from in the show notes. And as always, if you have any questions, feedback, or just think I'm wrong, please send us a message. I'm happy to discuss. In particular, if you are an addiction specialist in DC and either you want us to do something completely different or think I'm completely off base and want to sort of participate in improving the treatment of people in the district, please send us a message. Would love to work with you and make sure that this is the most appropriate education. Okay, so into the philosophy of this and sort of when are these home starts sort of an appropriate thing to consider. In general, if you have a patient coming into the emergency department who is either requesting detox, requesting help in finding treatment for opiate use disorder, or potentially has overdosed and been reversed from an opioid, it's worth considering and discussing this. Patients who are in withdrawal in the emergency department, go ahead, back up to our episode about how to start and screen for buprenorphine in the department itself. If they are not currently in withdrawal, see if they are interested in talking about or entering treatment. If they are, if it is before noon on a weekday and you're able to get them into either directly into an OTP intake or into one of DC's fast track providers the same day, it's reasonable to send them directly there if you can get them directly there. Most of the time, I think that's probably not directly accessible, particularly for if you're like me, if you work evenings or nights mostly. So for everyone else, if you're not in those sort of ideal time windows, this is sort of a framework of how to think about home starts. 2 days ago, I was going to say this should be less common. It was, I think we're all a little bit raised to think about follow-up. You know, if we have a hard time thinking about starting a new medication or starting a new treatment protocol if we don't know where the patient is going next. And I think in particular with addiction, we have a hard time knowing where to send our patients. I think we rely really heavily on our peer counselors, our social workers, and our case managers, which is great. They are a great resource, but it does make it a little bit scarier for us to think about treating de novo a condition that we feel that we don't know that much about or that we aren't sure where the patient's going to access care. So that was sort of my bias coming into this. And then actually over the past couple of days, I've had quite a few conversations with addiction docs and ER docs that are doing these sort of protocols around the country. And I've changed my mind and I'm going to talk a little bit about why. Basically, what we're seeing is that when patients with opioid use disorder come into the emergency department, it's usually sort of a prime moment for intervention. People in the emergency department are usually in either a moment of crisis or they're in a moment of vulnerability. They're either actively asking for detox or some sort of management, or they're presenting from an overdose. So probably, I can't speak for every patient, obviously, but for many patients, their motivation and their sort of barriers to starting treatment are probably at their lowest when they're in that sort of acute ER phase. So we are ultimately, as ER physicians, we are the gatekeepers to them accessing that care. Sort of the way we interact with patients in the emergency department, I don't want to give us too much importance, but it can be a little bit make or break. If we are saying, no, I'm not going to help you, no, I don't know how to do that, no, that's not a good idea, that's discouraging that patient from accessing future care. And it's sort of taking that moment of motivation and that moment of opportunity and sacrificing it. So I think this is particularly important in the context of the sort of current reality of the availability of care in the United States and particularly in the district right now. I think we all know that people with substance use disorder have a sort of history of experiencing medical stigma, medical trauma. I think in general, we know that they tend to have limited access to care. And when they're in front of us in the department, that's sort of an opportunity for us to sort of shift that narrative and that experience a little bit. If we are perpetuating their trauma, if we are perpetuating this inaccessibility of care, we're doing harm. So we have this moment of vulnerability. Even if we have sort of good connection to our resources and we're able to get patients into an outpatient clinic, the patient in front of us, if they leave the department without any sort of treatment, they are still vulnerable to overdose. We're leaving them uncovered. Even if we know they're going to an appointment in 3 days, that's 3 days where they are still vulnerable to overdose. I think I've had a couple of addiction docs tell me sort of about experiences they've had where even when they had appointments scheduled from sort of an ED referral, patients have overdosed or died between the ED visit and their clinic appointment because they didn't have sort of these protective measures that we can really intervene with things like buprenorphine and naloxone. Ultimately, buprenorphine is life-saving, and it's harder to start than it is to maintain, seems to be the consensus. When we have a patient in front of us who is in this moment of motivation, this moment of vulnerability, it's our responsibility to take that opportunity and give them their best chance, not only of making it to a outpatient continued treatment provider, but also to survive in whatever form that needs to look like, whether that is continued abstinence from opioid use or whether it's just surviving in terms of harm reduction. I think we owe that to them. So what do we actually do? Hopefully you're on board with me on at least considering home start protocols. But what do we do? This is kind of a complicated question. I'm going to make it as simple as I can for you. There are a ton of different protocols, dosing schemas, schools of thought on this. There's not a ton of high quality evidence as to which one works better than the others. I'm going to put links for several protocols in the show notes, and I'm going to present a framework of what I am comfortable with for sort of my personal practice based on reading a ton of these protocols and then just sort of based on my experiences. I recommend looking through some of these protocols and obviously making your own sort of clinical decision with the patient in front of you. But I think these frameworks are helpful for understanding safety margins, standard of care, things like that.